Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, it's time for WEEI at Night with Brian Barrett.
Plan A was Kimba Walker and Enes Kanter.
This was probably Plan D.
He's the reason I wear number 11.
I want to be the reason that no one else will.
Dial 617-779-7937.
If anybody ever does a special on me after baseball, I won't need to go on that interview. I will have former teammates. I will have former coaches. They can all vouch for me. He didn't have that. He either needs to move on or we can meet. One of the two. He says he wants to move on. Stop talking about it.
Now, it's time for Brian Barrett on Sports Radio WEEI.
All right, well, away we go. Your number tonight, 617-779-7937. JD from 103.3 Amp Radio is going to join us from 12 to 2 tonight. So a lot going on, a lot on the table. You want to talk about this David Price stuff? That's on the table. How about what's going on with the Celtics? Enes Kanter yesterday mocking Kyrie Irving. That was kind of funny. A lot of people liked it. I thought it was not as funny as some people thought. It was like the most hilarious thing in the history of the world. Kemba Walker introduced yesterday as well. So all that on the table. And of course, Chris Sale gets his start today against the Toronto Blue Jays after three starts where he had given up five earned runs in each of them. Chris Sale back on the mound today. What'd you think of him? 617-779-7937. All right. So Chris Sale against the Blue Jays today. The juggernaut that is the Toronto Blue Jays, who come into today 30th in on-base percentage, 24th in runs. Really, really bad baseball team. Or I should say 30th in average and 28th in on-base percentage. Really, really bad baseball team. But for whatever reason, Chris Sale has struggled against the Toronto Blue Jays for the majority of this particular season. He's really, really been struggling against the Blue Jays. And today he goes out there, dominant, gives up just two hits, has 12 strikeouts. So is Chris Sale back? Are we back to Sale Day? Is that where we're at now? Are we back to, okay, every fifth day you're getting ready to watch Chris Sale pitch and you're excited to watch Chris Sale pitch? Because what I saw today was a great sign going forward that you actually got the number one guy, or the guy that is supposed to be the number one guy in your rotation, that you got him going. Because if he had another bad start, to make it really, it would have been four consecutive horrible starts for Chris Sale, then we really have a problem. And then this thing is just getting totally out of control, because especially considering what happened on Tuesday night, one of the worst losses for the Red Sox, if not the worst loss for the Red Sox all season long, losing 10-4 to the Blue Jays. If Chris Sale goes back out onto the mound tonight and throws up a stinker, then you're really thinking about it to yourself as somebody that wants to see the Red Sox win baseball games, that you might as well just throw in the white towel. But I'm sorry, in this particular situation today, I can't go nuts about a performance that Chris Sale had. It's great to see, and you don't want to see the opposite. And we saw him after the game today, or at least I saw him. I hope a lot of you did as well. He's like holding back smiles, talking to the media, because after every start, it seems like he has to go out there over the past couple of weeks and say, I suck. And he talks about he's a liability. And today he definitely was not a liability. He looked really good. I was impressed with the slider. The slider looked really, really good today. Not to mention the fact that he brought out the changeup that worked really well. And the changeup was consistent as well. Now, in the fifth inning, he was able to dial up his fastball to 96 miles an hour against Galvis. Biggio, he threw him a 95-96 mile an hour fastball as well. But throughout the game, he was living at 90, 91 miles an hour. So the question is going to be going forward with Chris Sale is, it's one thing to have this type of performance against the Toronto Blue Jays, and it looks like you were in command, which is something that he was struggling with up until this particular start when he went through the rough patch, if you will. But is he going to be able to live at 91, 91 miles an hour against the Yankees, against the Rays, against the good teams in Major League Baseball? It's one thing to do it against the Blue Jays, but now can he string together a couple of starts? Because right now what Chris Sale has done, he's put a Band-Aid on the problem. But if he goes back out there in the next couple of weeks and he doesn't perform like he did today, not saying that he needs to go six scoreless innings every time and strike out 12 guys, but he can't be getting bombed around like he has for a couple of starts in a row. And the other thing that I would look at as it pertains to Chris Sale, if you really look through the season that Sale's had, it's great that he had a nice outing today. But throughout this season, He is now up to, what, 20 starts on the season. And he's had what I would call six dominant starts. The Rockies start where he had 17 strikeouts. The Royals start where he threw a complete game shutout. The Blue Jays today, of course, 12 strikeouts. Was great against the Rangers, two against the O's. Okay, so that's about 30% of your starts this season have been dominant. Those are the starts that you're paying Chris Sale for. Now, it's one thing when you have a hiccup once in a while, but look at in terms of bad starts Chris Sale has had. He's had five really bad starts. The Jays, two against the Jays, I should say. One against the White Sox, remember a couple of weeks ago where he couldn't find his slider, and everybody after that game was talking about Matt Barnes giving it up in the ninth inning. But the real story in that one was Chris Sale was awful in the first inning of that game, and that put the Red Sox behind the eight ball in that particular game. And then he had an awful start against the Mariners at the beginning of the season, and we all know what happened last week against the Dodgers, where the guy that you're paying all this money to couldn't make it out of the fifth inning of the game. So that's what? That is about a fourth of your starts this season. So you're talking about 20% of his starts this year have been bad, have been really, really bad. He's got 30 great starts, and the rest of the starts, about 50% of them, I would say are about so-so for Chris Sale. And then I also look at this. When you've needed him to show up in big games this season, Chris Sale hasn't been up to that yet. He hasn't been up to that level. Two starts against the Yankees was not good. Gave up four earned and both of those. You can say, oh, we won a game against the Astros, but remember that Astros start wasn't exactly like he was dominant in that one. Remember, he went, what, 5 1/3, and Marcus Walden had to come into a situation where the bases were loaded and they needed to get out of the jam, and Marcus Walden was the one that did it. Marcus Walden got Jake Mrazek to bounce into a double play. So even in that particular game against the Astros that he won, it was Marcus Walden getting him off the hook and getting the double play with Mrazek at the plate. So even that start was a start where Chris Sale got a lot of help from the bullpen. So when I look at Chris Sale's season in totality, he's still one of the main reasons that this team is significantly behind in the division. And this most recent rough patch is the one that concerns me, because we thought that he had gotten over that hurdle at the beginning of the season, which he did. And they talked about the fact that there were some adjustments they made, and it seemed like Chris Sale was going to take off. And he did for a couple of weeks there, or I should say a couple of months, and then he had this struggle. And it looks like now, okay, nice start against the Blue Jays, but I got to see this going forward. He's going to have a start coming up against the Rays in a couple of days here, or less than a week, I should say. And then after that, he should, you would think, get one of the starts against the Yankees that Sunday night baseball game. He should be in that particular game. So hopefully he gets in that start. That's when you need to see Chris Sale perform, because it seems like, from my perspective, I don't want to get fully back on board the Chris Sale train and start to believe in Chris Sale again until I actually see him do it for an extended period of time. And the other thing that's always in the back of my head as it pertains to Chris Sale is what happens to this guy later on in the season. Because we've never been questioning Chris Sale when it comes to April through August. He's always been a dominant pitcher, like the pitcher we saw on the mound today. He's always been that dominant pitcher we've seen from April to August. But the problem with Chris Sale has been this. When you get into September, he tends to break down. Remember, last year he was dealing with the shoulder injury. And the season before that, he had an ERA north of 350. Okay, you go back to his final season in Chicago with the White Sox. He had an ERA north of 350. And of course, we all know that he couldn't give you much in the postseason a year ago. So until we get to that point in the season, until we get into September, and we actually see Chris Sale perform at a high level, how can I get so excited about this one start that he had against the Blue Jays? It's progress, but it's progress from crap, right? He was pitching really, really poorly for four starts in a row, and really three starts were real bad, but the start before that wasn't even good against the Blue Jays. So really, it's been three horrible starts in a row, and he was able to get out of it today with a nice start against the Blue Jays. But you're paying this guy to perform when he's going up against the elite competition, because Dave Dombrowski said it multiple times. This team is built around the starting rotation. And the main guy that you need to be better for the majority of the season now going forward is Chris Sale. So Chris Sale's the one that needs to make up for his poor performance over the past couple of weeks. Chris Sale's the one that needs to make up for his poor performance at the beginning of the season. So you need to see this going forward with Chris Sale. So I'm not going to be all pumped up today watching Chris Sale pitch. Oh yeah, he was great against the Blue Jays. My concern is this. Is he going to be a guy that can pitch at 91 miles an hour in terms of the fastball? He was effective today against the Blue Jays. Let's see it against the Rays. Let's see it against the New York Yankees. Because if Chris Sale can be effective against those guys, all right, then we're talking about something with this team. because you want to jump back on board with the team based on the way that this team is just stacked from a talent standpoint. You look at the offense, they lead Major League Baseball in a lot of statistical categories. You look at the season that Rafael Devers is having. I know Rob Bradford and company were just having a whole conversation of whether or not he's the MVP of the American League and whatnot. Devers has been absolutely tremendous. I was looking at his spray chart today. He's got like 6 home runs to the opposite field. It's ridiculous the way that Devers is playing. And today, I mean, you throw him a mediocre fastball, hits at 417 feet. So you're getting all these great seasons from Devers, from Bogarts. Mookie is starting to get hot at this particular point in time. Vasquez has emerged as an offensive force, which nobody, quite frankly, saw coming. And we're questioning his defense now and his play calling more now than we're questioning his offense. You're getting his bat in the lineup, getting him as a DH, which if you said that a couple of years ago, if you even said that last year, people would have said you were crazy. So you have this lineup that is one of the best in Major League Baseball. And it feels like up until this point in the season, the lineup is being wasted. This unbelievable offensive season that these guys are having, that this team is putting together. And I get there's some issues with the situational stuff. I understand all that. And they're not the same hitting team that they were situationally a year ago. I understand some of that. But in terms of the numbers, they're better in a lot of statistical categories. I mean, they have been absolutely incredible. So I feel like this team is wasting a great offensive season. And Chris Sale is going to be the difference maker if this team is actually going to be a legitimate bona fide threat in the second half of the season, or if it's going to be more the same for the Red Sox that we've seen in 2019, which is disappointment, And that's all on the shoulders of Chris Sale. Now, there's other guys that need to contribute, but if your ace is not your ace, then you're in significant trouble. Because, yeah, David Price has had a really good season, and we can get into the whole situation with Dennis Eckersley as well. But David Price has had a really good season, but when I look at it, he's really good, but he's not exactly an ace at this particular point in time. He's been your best pitcher, but is he a bona fide ace in Major League Baseball? Is he of the Justin Verlander category? Is he even Ryu, who we saw, who's the leading candidate for the National League Cy Young? Is he up to that level yet? Is he on that level? And at this particular point in time, I don't see that from David Price. He's been really, really good, and he's been the ace of this staff by default, based on the way that a lot of the other pitchers have not performed whatsoever. But they need this difference maker at the top end of the rotation. That's what they need. That's what they need, the difference maker, which Chris Sale could be that guy. The other thing you look at is Nathan Eovaldi. So Nathan Eovaldi comes back today, and he pitches in Pawtucket, and he throws a scoreless inning, strikes out the side, and you can see all the videos. I mean, the stuff was absolutely nasty. He's throwing a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. If you can get Nathan Eovaldi back into this bullpen, you're looking at a situation, and he actually performs at a high level, because we still need to see that as well. It's great that he did it today and he's throwing 98 or whatnot, but we got to see this guy bounce back. Alex Cora said he's not going to be activated for tomorrow's game. He's not scheduled to pitch back-to-back days yet. They got to see how his arm takes after pitching today. So if you can get Nathan Eovaldi back in this bullpen, then maybe you're starting to feel a little bit better, because I get the Cashner sucked the other night, but at least he can eat up some innings for you at the back end of your rotation. But if you look at it, if you get Nathan Eovaldi, and Nathan Eovaldi can be the guy that they hope Nathan Eovaldi can be, which is just a consistent member of that bullpen, which quite frankly we cannot say about a lot of guys at this particular point in time. If you can get Nathan Eovaldi to be that guy, then you're talking about, all right, Brandon Workman has been one of the best relievers in Major League Baseball. Now, it still petrifies me going into a postseason series with that guy because of the fact that he has a lot of walks, 30 walks on the season. And I get it last night. I mean, I'm not going to really blame him for giving up a run last night. I had a couple of walks in that ninth inning because the guy went 45 pitches. So he's been consistent all season long, despite the fact that at times it concerns you that he walks too many people. And if Barnes can just not be overtaxed, not be overused, maybe Barnes, and we've seen it, he's been a much better player since the All-Star break than he was right before the All-Star break. And clearly the guy was taxed. It was like every time 2, 3, 4 come up in a lineup, you got to go to Matt Barnes, which at that particular point in time, you can expect that the guy is going to wear down. That's just what happens. So Matt Barnes gets back on track for the second half of the season. Then you're starting to think to yourself, oh, maybe this bullpen ain't that bad. But it all depends on Chris Sale at the top end of the rotation and now Nathan Eovaldi coming out of the bullpen. Because maybe Nathan Eovaldi, too, as he makes his way back, can start to pitch more than an inning. And now you have more reliable guys in your bullpen if he can give you 2 innings. Now, the one thing that I would say about Workman as it pertains to this series and as it pertained to last night, it's a little embarrassing that you had to let that guy go 45 pitches. And I'm not putting this on Alex Cora. This is not about Alex Cora. I'm just saying the fact that Brandon Workman had to go out there on 45 pitches, throw 45 pitches because Cora didn't trust anybody else in the bullpen. Didn't trust anybody else in the bullpen. Matt Barnes had already pitched. There's nobody else he could go to. So Workman had to go for 45 pitches. Okay, and it's not like, all right, you need the win because you're playing the Yankees, the Astros, whoever, the Cleveland Indians, a team that you're competing with right now in terms of a playoff spot. So it's not like it's against one of those teams. No. You needed Brandon Workman to go out to the mound against the Blue Jays last night to throw 45 pitches, just to make sure that you could hang on and beat the Toronto Blue Jays last night, okay, to assure yourself a split. Now, today you went on and you won the series by taking 3 out of 4, but you needed Workman for 45 pitches. And that's when you think about the Eovaldi factor, how much he could change the game for this team. Because even if you go back to the blown save that Matt Barnes had in the Chicago White Sox game, at that point in time, now, I believe the ERA is at about 9 right now when Barnes pitches on back-to-back days. But at that point, it was at 11, okay? And Alex Cora went to Matt Barnes in the bullpen. And that's because he had nobody else that he could trust to go to. Remember that day against the White Sox, it was the 8-7 game that Chris Sale was awful in the first inning of that game, couldn't find a slider whatsoever. So in that game, remember, Workman was down. He was not available in that game. So you had to go to Matt Barnes on back-to-back days. So we have the numbers, which means, of course, Alex Cora has the numbers. So Alex Cora knew that Matt Barnes had been awful on back-to-back days, but he didn't have another option in the bullpen. He didn't have a better option. So if you get Eovaldi and he could actually give you something in that bullpen, it's better than what you have right now. That's the reality of where you're at. I get it. The contract looks horrible, $17 million per season. I would have never done it for an injury-prone guy, especially considering he got hot in one postseason. Other than that, he's a 4.21 ERA guy. I never would have done it, but this is the reality you live in now. And the other thing that I would say from a positive perspective with his bullpen, Hernandez looked really good again today, okay? And he hit 97 twice in that ninth inning, okay? And also, I would look at this. That 94-95 mile-an-hour fastball, to me, looks scary. I mean, that thing hops on hitters. He looked really good out of the bullpen. So if he can just be more consistent throwing strikes out of the bullpen, because clearly as a starter, look at his AAA numbers. They were atrocious from a walks perspective. And when he came up that one game to start against the Rangers, it was atrocious as well. But I think the one thing that the Red Sox left you with today is hope. Okay, Chris Sale, maybe he can figure it out now. Maybe he's over this rough patch. Nathan Eovaldi pitching in AAA, throwing 98 miles an hour. There's hope. Hernandez, there's hope. But let's wait and see, because you got a stretch coming up where you got 3 coming up with the Rays after this Baltimore Orioles series, 4 with the Yankees, 3 with the Rays, and 4 more with the Yankees after that. So that's when we find out. That's when it's gut check time for this team. That's when we find out what this Red Sox team is made of. So far this season, massive disappointment. Massive disappointment for this team. Nobody would argue to the contrary. But they can figure things out in the second half of the season if they get Sale going, if they get Eovaldi going, if Hernandez can actually be a real thing coming out of the bullpen. Like, let's see him actually pitch in big games against good teams before we crown him. But at least what we saw against a bad Blue Jays team, granted, at least what we saw was there's a glimmer of hope with this Red Sox team. There is a little bit of hope. After the embarrassment on Tuesday night, we've seen some things over the past couple days that say, all right, maybe there's some hope there. All right, a lot more to get into. Your number 617-779-7937. Mookie Betts is starting to heat up. I'll tell you the reason for that. Okay, that's a radio tease. I'll tell you why Mookie Betts is heating up.
93.7 FM, WEEI.
It was overall command. I had a lot better feel for my changeup today. That's something that I really haven't had all year. I think, you know, I was able to actually use my changeup as an out pitch instead of more of just a show pitch. Obviously, this game's a little bit not easier, but easier if you have more pitches that you can throw at them.
Yeah, baby, there we go. Chris Sale didn't have to say after the game, I suck. I'm embarrassing my family. I'm a liability. I love it. Chris Sale today, he's happy. I was watching the post game and Chris Sale's holding back a smile, trying to hold back a smile. He's excited for the flight, he said. Going to be a nice flight after a win. So your ace didn't have to go out there today and say, I suck. What do you make of Chris Sale's performance today? 617-779-7937 is your number. Brian Barrett with you for the next 3.5 hours or so here on WEEI Late Night. Okay, now the other thing I want to mention, like I said, the one thing that I think the Red Sox left you with after the past 2 days is a little bit of hope, because Erod had another pretty good outing yesterday, gave up the couple of runs, but other than that, Erod looked pretty good yesterday, and Erod was great against the Dodgers, where he went 7 innings, striking out 10. So Erod's stringing together a couple of nice starts here. Chris Sale, there's a glimmer of hope there with Sale, okay? Now, I still want to see how he can live at 91-92 or 90-91-92 against the Yankees and the Rays of the world, or will the game plan be different? Will he try to throw harder against those guys? Will he be living at 94-95? Can he live at 94-95? Because what I took away from that Dodgers game is he tried to throw hard in the first inning, and it didn't work out for him. Throwing 94, 95, 96 didn't work out for him in that particular start. And that game, I thought, was a lot about confidence with Chris Sale. After he gave up the hit to Turner on the slider, he threw David Freese 5 straight fastballs. And Chris Sale's outpitch, he mentioned his changeup today was great, but his outpitch is normally his slider, and he didn't throw Freese one slider. And this is a guy that was hitting over 300 at the time, was David Freese. He didn't throw him one slider, all fastballs, because it felt like he didn't feel like he had a slider. At least that's the way that I took it, that he didn't feel like he had a slider to get David Freese out with, which was concerning. But today, had all the pitches working, but the one thing is the velocity was down. So I'm still waiting to see with Chris Sale, but at least there's a glimmer of hope, because now you get to see, can Chris Sale do this coming up against the Yankees and the Rays? At least he got back on track. And then you found some things with Hernandez in the bullpen. Maybe he's somebody that can do it consistently. But again, like, I'm not buying completely into the guy, because we've seen him for a couple of outings, but I want to see it when you actually do it against real competition. But the reason I say there's hope is because you can see what the hope is now. You can see how this team is actually going to be successful now, when a couple of weeks ago you couldn't see this actually happening, right? You couldn't actually see what was going on here, because the bullpen was so, so bad, and you didn't really see any answers coming until we heard Nathan Eovaldi's eventually going to get back in the bullpen, but you didn't know when that was going to be. And now we saw that he was throwing 98 today. He was absolutely dynamic in Pawtucket. So now there's some actual legitimate hope with this Red Sox team, and we know what the lineup is. It's already great. Not to mention the fact that you feel a lot better than Erod than you probably ever had as a member of the Red Sox. I mean, Erod over the past couple of starts has been really, really good. So you have all those things that factor in, so you have hope now. But now it comes down to that 14-game stretch. Do we see them actually perform at a high enough level against those teams in particular? Because we know the Yankees right now are an absolute juggernaut. The Rays are playing really good baseball as well, in terms of they're in front of you in the wild card race. So can you perform well against those teams? That's what I want to see from this Red Sox team. But this is what I take from the Blue Jays series. I'm trying to be positive for a change here, people, okay? I'm trying to be positive. There is hope. There is hope. Eovaldi in the bullpen, Workman's been great. See what Hernandez can do. There is some legitimate hope there. Okay, another reason for hope is the fact that Mookie Betts is absolutely red hot right now. You look at what he's doing entering today in the month of July. 417, 419 on base percentage, an OPS over 1,000. And I look at this too. You think about Mookie last year, when Mookie Betts was the MVP of the American League. He hit 367 with 8 home runs and a 457 on base percentage in a month. He also had a different month where he hit 372 with a 434 on base percentage with 9 home runs. So we know that Mookie Betts has the ability to get red hot. We just haven't seen it this year. Now, the on-base percentage has been there all season long. Mookie Betts has had a good season for normal players. But for Mookie Betts, because of what he did last year where he hit, what, 346, people are saying, what's wrong with Mookie Betts? And the numbers against lefties coming into today, I believe he was still hitting like 234 against lefties. Okay, so the numbers against lefties were not good. So you could point at some of the issues that Mookie Betts was having this year at the plate and say, look, he's got to be a lot better, right? Especially considering he's coming off that MVP season. But what I look at the difference with Mookie Betts now is, first of all, we all know the decision at the beginning of the year was a bad one to hit him in the second spot in the order. But now if you think about it, Mookie Betts doesn't have to carry the weight of hitting in a different spot in the lineup. He's back to hitting leadoff, and now what he has behind him for the first time all season long since he moved to the leadoff spot is he actually has a legitimate bona fide, and Rob Bradford was talking about this earlier, legitimate bona fide MVP candidate hitting right before him, okay? And earlier in the season, you had Andrew Benintendi hitting in that second hole, and he was a mess. Let's call it what it is. Andrew Benintendi has not been the player that we expected him to be, especially with the trajectory he was on. Remember, last year, at the All-Star break, he was like a fringy All-Star candidate, didn't get on that last ballot, and that's when they did the voting a little bit differently, didn't get on that last ballot. But really, since the All-Star break last year until now, the guy's had a significant power outage. He has not been the same player since then. And really, the average and stuff, it's all gone down. So you had somebody hitting in the second spot that nobody was scared to pitch to, right? Benintendi hasn't shown power in the, really, since last year's All-Star break, as I mentioned. So Benintendi's somebody in that second spot that you weren't afraid of whatsoever. Now when you look at this lineup for Mookie Betts, Rafael Devers has taken the pressure off him. And Mookie Betts even said after the game yesterday that he's seeing more pitches. And I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he essentially said he's getting better pitchers because nobody wants to pitch to Devers right now, right? Devers is the landmine in the lineup. Bogaerts is a landmine in the lineup. So now Mookie Betts can go back to his traditional role as a leadoff hitter. And remember last year, it was J.D. Martinez the teams feared. Now, Mookie had the MVP season, but who do you think opposing pitchers feared more, Mookie Betts or J.D. Martinez? The answer is pretty simplistic. It's J.D. Martinez because J.D. Martinez has power to all fields, right? He can hit the ball out of the ballpark to right field. So really, I mean, you can make a good pitch against J.D. Martinez. He can take it out the opposite way. Mookie Betts, when he hits home runs, primarily they're going to left field. I mean, he'll hit some to center as well, but rarely does Mookie Betts hit an opposite field home run. So now Mookie Betts is back in his traditional role, which is as the leadoff hitter. It was almost like Mookie Betts came into this particular season and there were so many things that were pointing towards Mookie Betts and pointing to pressure on Mookie Betts. The first one you think about is this. He had to defend the American League MVP trophy, if you will. So you have to live up to that. So you have to live up to being an elite player for the second straight year. Now, he's always been a really good player, but living in that elite company, right? Because if you look at Mookie Betts, only 1 year has he had an OPS over 900, and that was last year. So can you live in that elite company again? So the pressure of winning the MVP and backing it up, so to speak. All the talk about the contract, where coming into the season, we all know that he basically said he's didn't directly say this, but it looks like he's going to go to free agency, right? He's not interested in talking about the contract right now, so we'll see when the time comes if the Red Sox actually pull the trigger on a possible deal in the offseason if they don't think that they're going to keep Mookie Betts long term. But that's a conversation we can have in a couple months. But nonetheless, we were talking, oh, is he going to get Mike Trout money? Mike Trout got that contract extension north of $400 million. And we always knew, oh, well, Bryce Harper, he's definitely going to get more than Bryce Harper. So that contract stuff, he's even alluded to the fact during the All-Star break that you can't help but thinking about the contract. So you had those two things weighing on you, and then your position in the batting order changed, right? So the reason they put Mookie Betts in that two-hole, Alex Cora announced it. Remember, this is the big thing they talked about at the winter meetings, is the batting order was changing. Again, I don't understand why, but nonetheless, you had the best offense in all of Major League Baseball last year, and you changed up the batting order. Makes total sense to me. I don't really understand, but nonetheless, I digress. So you had those three things, Mookie hitting in a new spot in the order, Mookie dealing with the contract stuff, Mookie dealing with defending the American League MVP trophy and living up to that player again. And clearly, he had struggled for a good portion of the season in terms of the batting average. And now he's starting to get red hot because the conclusion I'm drawing is now Mookie Betts is finally comfortable again, right? Not all the pressure is on Mookie Betts anymore. It seemed like Mookie Betts was thinking about that contract, right? Not to say like when he's at the bat, he's up in the box and he's actually legitimately saying, hey, if I ever get this hit, I'm going to get this amount of money. No, but that kind of stuff weighs on you. That kind of stuff can weigh on a player. And now this has become a season that's way more about Rafael Devers. It's way more about Xander Bogaerts. It's way more about those guys than it is Mookie Betts. And coming into the season, all the attention was on Mookie Betts because Mookie was the guy that was coming off the MVP season. Mookie was the guy that we were talking about his massive contract extension. So now that the pressure, so to speak, is off of Mookie Betts, it's off his shoulders, it seems like this is the time that this guy is going to get red hot. And we've seen it over the past couple of games here in July, really. He's been absolutely unbelievable. And I have to imagine that since now we're talking about Devers and we're talking about Bogaerts and we're talking about J.D. Martinez, we're talking about other guys, not just all the focus at the beginning of the season seemed to be on Mookie Betts. Remember last year, Devers was a platoon third baseman. He was splitting time with Eduardo Nunez. Bogaerts was a good player, but he wasn't near this type of player. Like Bogaerts, we were talking about earlier, Rafael Devers having a case for the MVP. Bogaerts is in that conversation as well. If the man by the name of Mike Trout didn't exist. Bogaerts would be in that conversation as well. So we weren't talking about those guys. Everything was on Mookie Betts' shoulders. And now it seems like Mookie Betts is more in that comfortable role. Because going back to last year, coming into the season, the talk was about J.D. Martinez. Can J.D. Martinez actually take over for David Ortiz in the lineup? Because remember, that was the big, massive issue that the Red Sox had in the 2017 season. They couldn't find a way to replace David Ortiz because 2016, he had like an MVP caliber season at the DH position. Remember, there was legitimate MVP talk about David Ortiz his final season. And then you go into the 2017 season and there was a huge power outage. He didn't have that bat in the middle of the order. Remember at the time, one of the guys that everybody wanted to sign was Edwin Encarnacion. They didn't do that. They end up with J.D. Martinez the next year. But the questions were, okay, J.D. Martinez gets the big contract. Can he make up for what David Ortiz did? And clearly he answered all the questions. The culture changed with the team as well, where everybody's listening to J.D. Martinez in terms of his approach to hitting. He's a hitting savant. So it became about J.D., and Mookie could just be the guy he was at the top of the lineup. It seems like this to me. If Alex Cora just puts Mookie Betts in the leadoff spot, he's going to be fine. That's what we've learned over the past 3 to 4 years with Mookie Betts. And this goes back to the John Farrell era, if you will, as well. Because remember, he goes from a great 2016 season where he's an MVP candidate. Great season in 2016. Finished runner-up to Mike Trout. Then 2017, they're messing with his spot in the batting order. Okay, 2018, you put him leadoff. You have a traditional hitter in terms of the middle of the lineup in J.D. Martinez. And what do you know? Mookie Betts goes back to being the great player that Mookie Betts was. And now Mookie Betts back in the lineup again at the top of the lineup. And now with a competent hitter behind him in Rafael Devers, Mookie Betts can go back to Mookie Betts' traditional role as the leadoff hitter, setting everything up, okay, for all the other guys in the lineup. It feels like Mookie Betts, for the first time this season, with all the crap that was going on with the contract, and not to say that Mookie Betts has been an issue in terms of the clubhouse or anything. I'm not saying anything like that, but I'm just saying you had to deal with all that crap. You had to deal with the expectations of following up such an unbelievable season you had a year ago. You had to deal with being in a different spot in the order. It finally feels like Mookie Betts is comfortable in the 2019 season with his role on the team. Not that he ever thought like, oh, I need to be in a different position in the batting order. Not that he was thinking that to himself. But the results would tell you that you needed to move Mookie Betts to the leadoff spot earlier. And you wonder this too when it comes to Alex Cora's perspective. He's been great in terms of making changes we've seen in the past and pinch hitting guys. I mean, he's got an unbelievable sense of when to pinch hit certain guys. Remember last year, like Nunez in a lineup in a game, everybody was questioning in the playoffs. He comes up with a hit in the World Series, comes in, hits the home run. So he's had a great feel for these type of things. But for whatever reason, it took them, what, 57 games to realize Mookie Betts was not comfortable in that second spot in the batting order. And now Mookie Betts is finally comfortable. And with the way that Devers is going and with the way that Bogaerts is going, that's what gives you hope about this Red Sox team. Along with some of the other stuff I mentioned, this lineup now, you have Mookie Betts playing at the level that Mookie Betts is supposed to be playing at this particular point in time. And that's one thing you feel great about as you now get ready to play the Rays and play the Yankees as well. Now I just want to see Nathan Eovaldi come back. That's what I want to see now. Because when I look at this Red Sox team, I want to make sure that Nathan Eovaldi gets on the mound against the Orioles before you go through the gauntlet, right? I want to see him get out there against the Orioles. And I know he's not going to be activated tomorrow because he's not going to be pitching on back-to-back days. But I want to see Nathan Eovaldi pitch against. And I get, look, this will be like another rehab stint. Rehab start, if you will. Not start, but rehab appearance. Because he was going up against the Louisville Bats today. He gets to go up against the Orioles. That's essentially a Triple-A team. Get him warmed up for the Yankees and the Rays. Let's go. Let's get Nathan Eovaldi out there. I mean, he's making $17 million a season, okay? I want to see Nathan Eovaldi actually play a role on this team. And if you go on Twitter today and you see the highlights from Nathan Eovaldi, his stuff looked absolutely filthy. But I need to see it when it actually comes down to it. So Nathan Eovaldi here is going to be one of the, if not the most important players on the Red Sox in terms of the bullpen. One of. I mean, it's him and Brandon Workman right now. Those two guys are going to have to be the backbones of this bullpen. And man, Dave Dombrowski better hope it works. He better hope this thing works, because if it doesn't, man, this offseason, whew, that's a rough offseason for Dave Dombrowski. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937 if you want to hop on board. If you want to weigh in on the David Price, Dennis Eckersley situation, we can get into that as well. Your number again, 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you, WEI Late Night.
WEI 93.7 FM. We'll be right back.
honestly, I just think it's trash. You know, he had an unbelievable career, 25 seasons. He's a Hall of Famer. You know, I saw his special on MLB Network. It was cool. And one thing that definitely stood out to me, he had zero former teammates in that interview. Not one. Talking about him. It was him talking about himself. If anybody ever does a special on me after baseball, I won't need to go on that interview. I will have former teammates. I will have former coaches. They can all vouch for me. He didn't have that. And to me, that is, that's all you need to know. That tells the entire story right there. You know, my teammates will vouch for me. My coaches will vouch for me. He doesn't have that, so he has to vouch for himself. And I'm going to stick up for myself at all times. I don't care what backlash I get, the negative attention. I'm fine with that, but I'm going to speak up for myself. I'm going to stand up for myself, and he either needs to move on or we can meet. One of the two. If he says he wants to move on, stop talking about it.
Oh, there he is. What a beaut. David Price talking about the Dennis Eckersley situation, which I thought was dead 2 years ago, but apparently not. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you for the next 3 hours or so here. WEI Late Night. I just don't understand how David Price can be this clueless. Like, you realize that people are going to go ahead and ask people about the documentary and say, hey, did you interview other players? And they did. The Boston Globe had it. So they did interview other players. But the documentary is called Eck on Eck. So they want it mainly to be about Eck. So throwing something like this out there, I don't understand what David Price thinks it's going to do for him. Does he actually think, because he pitched well in the postseason last year, and let me rephrase that. He pitched well in the postseason after his first two starts because he came out of and pitched on short rest against the Astros, was great, and then he was great against the Dodgers. But let's not forget, he was horrible against the Yankees, was not good his first start against the Astros. So, yes, he saved this team in the postseason, but it's not like he had a Madison Bumgarner-like run in the postseason. It's not like he had a John Lester-like run in the postseason. He was good, but let's not go overboard here, okay? It's not like David Price was, like, this unbelievable hero in the postseason, okay? It wasn't one of the best performances we've ever seen. It wasn't like a shilling performance back in the day. Like, yeah, you were good, man, okay? You were good, but is that what he thinks? Does he think because he was good in the postseason that whatever he says, people are just going to agree with it now? And like a clueless comment like that, what did he think the results were going to be? Did he think people were going to say, because David Price won, so we like David Price now, so we're going to say, oh yeah, Eck's in the wrong. Why wouldn't Eck just meet with him and let David Price apologize to him? Like all David Price had to do yesterday when he was asked about this was say, yeah, I tried to schedule a time to apologize with him. He was not interested in doing that, and I'm still open to doing that, and I've moved on. That's all he had to say. But he says that he's moved on, and then he rips Eck. So clearly he hasn't moved on. I just don't understand what David Price thought he was going to accomplish yesterday. You don't even have all the facts of the documentary, and you're out there trashing the guy, say his teammates don't want to talk about him, and yet you don't have the facts. Like, teammates did want to talk about him. I just don't get how somebody can be this clueless. Like, what is he trying to accomplish there? I have no idea whatsoever what the hell David Price is trying to accomplish there yesterday. No idea.
Move on, or we can meet.
Yeah, exactly. We can meet. Apparently, he wants to meet again. I don't know. He says he's over it. Apparently, he's not. 617-779-7937 is your number. Let's get to Alex and Natick. What is up, Alex?
Hello?
Hey, what's going on, man?
All right. So you look at who's available at the trade deadline, and it's always good relievers. You know, bad teams in baseball that are out of contention are going to sell their best relievers. And you look at the Giants, who have Will Smith, Padres, who have Kirby Yates. They're an abundance of top-shelf guys that we can get, you know. Because they're at the back end of their contracts.
All right, Alex, you're kind of breaking up. I can't really hear him. I appreciate the call, Alex. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. Sorry, he's kind of breaking up there. I think his point was there's a lot of good arms out there on the market in terms of the bullpen was pretty much the gist of what he was saying. You mentioned Kirby Yates with the Padres, Will Smith with the Giants, etc. So I understand where he's coming from, but I don't think this team's going to make another significant move. I don't see it. I mean, they're right up against that luxury tax threshold. We've seen what the plan is, right? They're getting guys ready, like they're bringing Hernandez up, and he's been up for a little bit here, who's going to play a role in the bullpen going forward. Looked really good today. A couple of 97-mile-an-hour fastballs. His fastball's got, like, jumps, too. When it was going 94, 95, I was watching that thing saying, that looks a lot faster than 94. It kind of jumps on hitters, okay? So that's going to be one guy they're going to try to get something out. Remember, this is a team that caught lightning in a bottle last year with guys like Ryan Brazier. And Hernandez is the number one pitching prospect in the organization. So that's somebody that they can hopefully over the next couple of weeks get production from. They're hoping. Nathan Eovaldi is going to be They won't say he's going to be your closer, but he's going to be somebody that comes out of the bullpen. Okay? We know Nathan Eovaldi's there. Workman has been outstanding in terms of the opposing batting average. Historic stuff. I mean, the guy's been incredible. And Matt Barnes. So those are four guys right there that you're looking at, not to mention the fact that I get Taylor got bumped around the other night, but Taylor's somebody that you're hoping you can depend on as well. So I look at this team right now, their move, I believe they already made. I believe their move was Cashner, where they decided, okay, let's get somebody that Alex Cora had familiarity with the Orioles people, whatnot, because they were together in Houston when Cora was the bench coach. So they saw some stuff with Cashner. He's throwing more changeups, although that was kind of scary the other night. Guy has a great changeup. They're hitting him all over the place. But nonetheless, it's one start. I'm willing to give him another opportunity. I'm not going to get all over the guy for having one bad start. At least he went out there and he got past the 3 1/3, which the fifth starters in this rotation were averaging in terms of like the openers, whatever you want to call them. So at least there was that. I mean, at least there's progress from that perspective. But that to me was the move. Because Nathan Eovaldi, we know, is not going back into the starting rotation, despite the fact they say they won't rule it out. He's not going back into the rotation. So the move was get Cashner to eat up that fifth spot in the rotation. And now you look at the bullpen. You have a bunch of guys that you think you can find something with. So I don't see them going after one of these big-time relievers on the market. And quite frankly, if they're where they are right now, I wouldn't even blame ownership for doing that, for not going over the luxury tax threshold. If you don't know that, oh, we get this arm, it really puts us over the top. Now, if they go on a tremendous run here and they run through the Rays, they run through the Yankees, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, we're one arm away and we just beat the crap out of the Yankees in the Rays, okay. But I mean, if it's one of these things where you drop 3 or 4 to the Yankees, what's the point of spending and taking on more money for a team that probably isn't going to make it to the World Series? So, yeah, it's one thing if you just go nuts in the next couple of weeks and play well, then I would get it. But from my perspective, I think the move has already been made. The move is Cashner. And Eovaldi, I guess you're acting as if that's like a trade deadline move, if you will, even though you signed it before the season at $17 million. But, I mean, look, the contract is what the contract is at this particular point in time. You just got to see what you have with it. So I don't see the Red Sox doing anything from a drastic perspective as we get closer to the trading deadline. I really don't. And, oh, by the way, you know there's only one trading deadline this year? How many times are people going to say that? We get it, okay? I don't understand why I have to hear this every day. Every day I have to hear, there's only one trading deadline this year. No crap. Everybody knows it. Like, let's stop talking about there's only one trading deadline. Everybody knows there's only one trading deadline, okay? I understand it, okay? You don't have to remind me every day that there's only one trading deadline. Everywhere you go, oh my God. And there's only one trading deadline. I'm watching ESPN today. They're reminding us, Tim Kirchner. Yeah, there's only one trading deadline this year, guys. Yeah, we know. Okay, we get it. Okay, everybody's made that abundantly clear. All right, a lot more to get into. Enes Kanter is trolling Kyrie Irving. Did you like it? Kemba Walker, some interesting comments. Are you happy with where your Celtics are at this particular point in time? Danny Ainge says Kemba and Enes Kanter were plan A. You buying it? 617-779-7937. The number, Brian Barrett with you right here, WEI Late Night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.